Welcome to Business Game Changers, where you'll hear expert tips on the big issues and the hottest trends to level up your business game. If you're building a career or building a business, this is Must Hear Radio. Here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. This show, we are going to be talking with Zach Brower, who's the CEO and founder of COS Consulting. His company analyzes the buying patterns of companies to see what they're up to. Pretty much what they do is they take Google, Apple, Microsoft, and whatever company that you want to figure things out for. They look at their financial statements, dive way into them, figure out who and what companies they've been buying, whether they've been incorporating it into their company or letting them run on their own, and then using that information to figure out what their next steps are, what industries they're going to go into, what they're going to invest into next, those kinds of things. So that'll be a very interesting conversation with him. And then I'm going to be talking to the CEO of BizApps, David Gazdecki, for my Gear Up for 2015 segment. And his company, which landed number 58 on the Inc. 500 list for over 4,000% growth this past year, which is pretty incredible. His company has an affordable way for small businesses and entrepreneurs to do business-to-business applications on mobile devices. And, you know, large businesses have been doing this for a while, but it's just so expensive. And his company has come up with a platform that allows small businesses and entrepreneurs to do this directly with clients or with other small businesses. It also allows entrepreneurs to get a new business concept off the ground in a really affordable way. So he's going to be talking about that. And then before I do all those cool things, we're going to be talking about my great adventure into solar. My husband and I decided to do a renewable energy project this year with solar. And we want to take advantage of the 30% tax rebate that the federal government is, or actually it's a tax credit, well, rebate, that the federal government is doing. That particular credit will expire at the end of 2015. And we really want to take advantage of that because we figured that now there's a big if, and this is what I'm working through, and I think I've determined that the if is a good if. If the solar project can turn out where the amount that we pay monthly on our loan is the same as what we would be normally paying for energy, then this is a great investment because the credit that we're getting will be on top of just the fact that the loan is the same amount. So the credit's on top. Plus, there are other incentives that local governments and energy companies give you. So I know that the big Xcel Energy, that's one of the big companies in our area, gives a pretty good tax, or not a tax, a credit. Like they give you an incentive per watt of what you use. And there are other state programs as well that you can get grants and different rebates for doing solar energy as well. So depending on where you live, you'll have different incentives to do it. And even just using, because we don't have a lot of incentives in our area, so just using the 30% federal tax credit, we figured out that our monthly bill will be about the same as what it is now, just with the loan payment instead of the energy payment. And then the other thing is there's these things called energy credits, which I am going to dive into at another time, but it's these that your project will develop a certain amount of energy credits that you can then sell on these exchanges. And I'll talk all about that another time. But we decided to go with this company called True North Solar. And the reason why we decided to go with this company is it's a local company. So if you're not in my area, you won't be able to go with them. But the reason why I wanted to go with this company is because in our area, we're a little bit behind on these exchanges that I can sell my credits on. And they are leading the cause in setting up this whole exchange locally. They also gave me the best bid. So I got to look at that. And they seem the most knowledgeable at this point. And I'm, you know, obviously you want to go with somebody that you feel is very competent. You don't always want to go with the lowest bid. You want to go with somebody that you feel is going to get the job done. So that's what we're doing. And if you are interested in getting a bid on solar, right now the company is giving away $50 restaurant.com cards for anybody that goes and gets a bid on a solar project. So if you think this is something that might work for you, like you don't have a ton of trees, that's over your roof, and you have a pretty good, you know, you have a pretty good open roof plan, or if you're on a farm or something and you think you could take advantage of this, give them a call and see if you can get what I got. I mean, don't lose out on this credit that the federal government is giving you. I mean, if your monthly bills stay the same, plus you get a 30% tax credit, you should really take advantage of that. Okay, so now we're moving on. I want to introduce Zach Brower to the show, and we're going to find out what Google and Microsoft and Apple are up to. Hi, Zach. Welcome to the show.
Hey there. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. I was pretty impressed when I talked to you last about all the different things that you are doing, analyzing different companies. And when I heard what you were doing, I just said, oh gosh, I got to get this person on my show. You, and you need to correct me after I'm done here and tell the listeners exactly what you do, but all the big tech companies, Apple, Microsoft, Google, Twitter, some Facebook, Yahoo, I mean, and go on and on, you have been doing research to figure out what they're doing. What is their next big play? What are these guys into? And it's really interesting. Can you give just kind of a brief description of what your company does and what you've been working on?
Absolutely. I mean, you hit the nail pretty much on the head, but to get a little more in depth in the span of, you know, 60 seconds so I don't put anyone to sleep, what we're really focusing on is finding patterns in the way the companies move, and based off of that information, being able to both identify why past behaviors have happened that way and figure out what they're going to do next, as well as finding good places to invest based off of that information.
So your target market or people that you would be working with are investment firms or strategic marketing people, things like that, trying to figure out, trying to hedge their bets what the market's going to do, or figuring out how to be a fast follower after Apple or Microsoft, or figure out where you might want to invest your money into.
Yeah, that it's a nail on the head. More specifically, what I'd really love to look at are venture capitalists. I really love working with startup companies, and it might be easier to help direct those venture capitalists as to where that money should go based on what ideas are going to become popular, what ideas are things that certain companies are really buying up, helping them know, hey, not just this might get bought, but here's who's going to want it and here's why.
Okay, so since we have you on, you need to give us some juicy information on some of these companies, because I know you have a lot of them. And I know there's so much more detail behind this, but if you could just give us some juicy things so that our listeners can kind of get an idea of where these companies are at. Can we start with Apple, since everybody's interested in what's going on with Apple these days?
Absolutely. Apple's made a couple interesting purchases. The biggest one they've made in the past year was buying Beats. The reason I believe they bought Beats was because they're starting to take the step into the whole physical fitness realm with the iWatch coming out, measuring things like, you know, how far you've walked, how what your heart rate is, and Beats also coming out with technology aimed more at athletes, like the wireless headphones.
Well, because so right now they only really have earbuds and stuff. They didn't have a really nice line of headphones. Correct?
They definitely don't. As someone who works out with Apple earbuds, I can say you can only have a stray barbell rip the earbuds out of your ears so many times before you're ready to just pack up and go home.
So they knew that was a problem. So they're moving on to that. But what else are they doing that's interesting? I mean, it sounds like you're saying that with their wearable devices, they might be getting into some health stuff.
Well, that's entirely possible. I'd say for now, Apple is not only not going to be getting into the health field, I think they're going to have some problems when people start asking them about why they haven't. With purchases like with items like the watch coming out, you're going to have people starting to go, wow, well, this is awesome. Now I can track all this information, which could be used for things like rehab, getting in shape, working with a doctor. But people are going to start investigating, well, hey, where does this data go? Where is this information stored? Security is such a huge issue right now, especially with, you know, the NSA scandal a year or two ago.
Oh, so they're going to be tracking all this health information off their wearable devices, and then it's going to be in their cloud. And so they potentially have a big privacy issue looming.
I mean, that is a huge understatement, just because a lot of people don't even realize Apple has recently opened a data center in China. I know you work in telecommunications, so I'm sure you can come up with one or two issues right off the top of your head about why that's a problem.
Well, yeah. I mean, I had a show a while back with Bob Weiss, who's an expert at security, and that show really talks about having data in other countries, because once your data gets out of this country, you have no rights as a U.S. citizen. It's pretty much fair game.
And not only is that a big problem, because Apple markets so heavily at people who are a little bit older or not as skilled with technology or younger people, when this information first comes out, it's probably not going to be broken by them as much as a third party writing an article about it. What I want you to envision is trying to explain to your grandmother or grandfather about what's happening to their data and why it's in China, and just, you know, imagine how that conversation would go.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Okay.
It's not going to bode too well for them. So that'll be a problem they'll face in their future.
So what else you got for us?
The next big thing I want to talk about actually involves two companies, Microsoft and Google, and it's home automation. That's a really...
Oh, that's going to be a great market. They haven't, that market is so fertile. It hasn't, they've been talking about home automation for a long time, but other than in the built, you know, the multi-million dollar homes, so the more affluent household, shall I say, you really aren't seeing it yet.
Absolutely. I actually used to work for Best Buy. We used to sell this thing called Connect 4, and to automate your entire house, which meant you could control your lights, your garage, and maybe your thermostat, it would cost you an arm and a leg. Now, the technology's cheaper, but there's no one who's really running that market, and that's where you see Google purchasing companies like Nest Labs, which was one of the bigger names in the game for home automation, Microsoft also buying in, and you're going to see those two go back at it. For those who don't really know too much about Microsoft and Google, they've had a pretty big rivalry going for a couple of years now.
Well, Microsoft always goes into markets and just wants to take it over. I mean, they've been really successful doing that, where they get the, you know, they get the leadership position, and nobody has leadership position yet in that realm. I guess Microsoft kind of lost the, oh, they didn't really lose the browser deal, but they really worked hard to get that. And Wikipedia is another one where they just didn't, they tried to get the whole encyclopedia thing, and they didn't get that. They didn't get the Bing search. Google won that. And so they don't want Google to win this game too, right? I mean, based on what you're seeing them invest in.
Exactly. I think that Microsoft is very weary. They've been beaten by Google a couple of times. And even when they've won those certain battles, it hasn't been by a substantial margin to make it worth it. There is one thing Microsoft is doing differently, though, that might give them an edge on Google. And that's actually opening stores. That's one thing Apple's really fantastic at. They have opened 400 plus stores since they began,
not to interrupt you, but for home automation, that could be a really big strategic advantage. But go ahead.
Absolutely. No, you're totally right. Microsoft, in the past 5 years has opened 60 stores, and having seen the home automation thing, since it's such a new technology, a lot of people are going to be more wary to buy it online. They'll actually want to go into a store, see how it works, talk to a salesperson about it to understand what the pluses and minuses are. So I think that having those stores may be the edge that Microsoft needs to beat Google in this realm, at least for a while.
Are our houses going to be like Jetsons?
I mean, it's possible, but the big difference is in the Jetsons, there was an active use of a treadmill, and I guess that'd be a different conversation about the way Americans' health has been going.
You mean there? It's more like, what is that cartoon with the robot where everybody's just sitting there watching TV?
Futurama?
No, it's... I don't think it's a little iRobot for the kids. It's a Pixar movie, I think. And they're all up in this outer space and they're just sitting there watching. Wall-E. Yeah. That's probably right?
I'd say that might be more down the line, which is another reason it's smart to invest into medical technologies now.
Okay. So what else are they going to do with this home automation? You were talking offline about some of the stuff that you think they're planning on doing.
At this point, what I think would be really smart for Google to start investing in, and what it seems like they are based on some of the purchases they've had in the past year, is stepping into the medical realm, not just automating a home so your garage will open when you're pulling up, but actually automating it so you can tie in things like Lifeline or having checkups or even just being able to contact a doctor for someone who doesn't have easy access to a hospital. Maybe a hospital's not nearby geographically. Maybe they're just too busy to make it in. This could be a great first step. Bringing medicine to them.
Instead of everybody going to the emergency room when you have an ear infection, you could do interact with a doctor online or in your, video conference, and they could check them out, and you could
right? You could take temperature and things like that.
I totally agree. One of my favorite stories to tell about this whole thing is when I was little, my dad used to hate taking us to the hospital. And his reasoning was, if I go to a hospital where everyone's already sick and I'm fine, I might get sick.
Well, that was the whole Ebola thing, right? I mean,
exactly.
How many health workers are getting sick because of Ebola?
Exactly. The problem that they've run into in the past, though, are things like not being able to have something to work with, you know, like working with something like a robot to help show people how to do certain motions or helping detect where there's certain pain and different things, as well as just having the webcam footage itself need a lot of development. It's been hard, you know, if you're wearing certain articles of clothing to really get picked up by things like motion cams at this point.
Are they investing in robotics?
They are actively, Google is actively investing in robotics, gesture recognition, increased online security, e-commerce, which would be used for transactions of payments for things like insurance, which I'm sure insurance companies would be very, very, very partial to, and image recognition. So they really are putting forth that effort.
So you think that they're looking at bringing robots in the home and have it incorporating into healthcare?
I think that the robots would be more in the hospital. It would be more for demonstrating things like how to do certain rehab techniques or even helping by, like, you know, the chart you click on when you log on a website, where are you hurting? Having that actually be something on the robot that would pop up for the doctor to see.
Ah, interesting. Well, I know the hospital, my sister's a doctor, my other one's a pharmacist, and that stuff, I know it's getting a lot better, but the pharmacy prescriptions between the doctor and the pharmacy really needs to get a lot better because there's a lot of mistakes and problems between the pharmacy and the doctors. So I think, you know, different things like this would be very helpful.
It's interesting you mentioned pharmacy. I actually used to work as a pharmacy technician, so I definitely understand what you're talking about. But I will say this, the areas in which have been automated work fantastically. That's where there really aren't any problems. The problems do come from the communication on the things that aren't just automatically sent into a machine to pop out a bottle of pills in it.
Well, a handwritten prescription, right?
Exactly. That's where a lot of the issues arise. And so different things that would help with that would be awesome. And that's one thing that an IM client, which is another thing that Google's invested in, something to message back and forth, if it's made secure enough, could be an alternative to scanning a handwritten prescription, actually having a direct line of communication with a pharmacy from a hospital.
Oh, yeah. That would be really convenient. I mean, being a mom of two kids and dealing with prescriptions, that would be really nice to not have the hassle with all those things.
Exactly. You have companies like Best Buy that use that now for checking if someone has a TV. But when it comes to things like prescriptions or different issues with patients, that is something that at this point, I don't think there's a safe enough IM client available where doctors and pharmacists as a whole would feel comfortable using it for that information. But that could be a step they're taking in the next year or two.
So what do you have with Facebook?
Facebook is really interesting, less because of what they're currently doing, more based on what they've done, because Facebook really helps to me prove the theory that you can find these patterns. They purchased two companies in late 2013, one focused on speech translation and the other focused on sport conversation analysis. Those two alone might seem like, why would they purchase that? But when you think about it, what was coming up in early 2014?
I don't know.
The World Cup.
Oh, the World Cup's big. More people, now this is something I know because I sit on the soccer board. More people enjoy soccer than any other sport in the world.
And part of that is because it's such a globally loved sport, but that means you have a lot of people talking about the sports, but in different languages. Well, by having updated speech translation, you not only make it easier for fans to communicate with fans, but by using that coupled with speech conversation analysis, you can see what people are talking about and aim advertising at that, aim how you're dressing up apps and different things, different aspects of Facebook and news stories.
They're analyzing what someone's saying to be able to, I suppose, speech analysis. So they're analyzing the talk and being able to hyper-niche that market.
Exactly.
Based on talk. Oh, that's interesting. But then they're also able to translate it on the fly for people who are watching Brazil play Spain and you can only speak English, but the commentator's speaking Spanish and they can translate it on the fly instead of having somebody typing at a translator like we usually were used to.
And that's great for FIFA, but even beyond that, just having, say, I want to post a Facebook status about the World Cup and my friend in Brazil also wants to post one, we might be able to actually read statuses back and forth and communicate, which FIFA will love because it lets fans all over the world communicate, making their
real
community
time
that much smaller.
This
exactly.
is Star Trek stuff. So when the Romulans come and visit us, we can all speak the same language.
I mean,
when the Brazilians talk to us on Facebook, we can speak the same language. You know what the Romulans are, right? Are you a Star Trek fan or not?
I was raised on Star Wars, personally.
Oh, so you don't know what they are? They're the, well, forget it.
All
Keep
I
going.
Know is, all I know is if I'm ever cast in an episode of Star Trek, never wear a red shirt. That's all that was explained to me.
What, did people wearing the red shirt always die?
That's what I've been told.
Maybe that's their underlying code for this person's going to die. Anyways, keep going.
So the other thing that Facebook bought, and this is a little more looking forward, is fitness tracking apps. Now, while the iWatch has been the one to get the most attention, companies all over have been starting to make their own version of smartwatches, and all of them incorporate some level of fitness. Now, this can be Nike's Fuel Band, this could be Samsung releasing a watch, or Microsoft, or Fitbit. But the one thing that they all should have in common is something that they can all mutually access. Otherwise, people are going to buy any of the three watches that can post on Facebook and ignore the one that can't. People love to share what they're doing, share the fitness stuff, share goals, all of that. And it's a smart move of Facebook to try and say, hey, if you need one thing to all have in common, why shouldn't that be Facebook?
So it sounds like a lot of these companies are getting into wearables.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Okay. Well, the thing that I think is really cool, being honest, is the speech translation or the word translation on the fly, as long as it's good, because that allows us to talk to anyone. Because right now we still have language barriers, but mm-hmm. if you could free flow talk to people without there being a choppy, as long as the software's good, you know, how good would you say that software is?
I would say right now it's still in development. I think that they bought it with a large amount of time before the World Cup started specifically so they would be able to get it worked out. I have seen it be used on Facebook, but I'm not at the point where I'm actively using it to communicate with friends out of the country.
Okay. Well, I mean, I had the first Newton that Apple put out. That was the first touch handheld deal. Mm-hmm. It was awful. I mean, you really couldn't use it for that purpose. But if you compare it to how the technology is now, it's like light years ahead. So I would assume it's in that ballpark where, I mean, I would think the speech translation is so much farther ahead than what Newton was back then. But knowing the leap and bounds that came, I would think that eventually it would just be like you're talking to them in their language. It's going to be kind of neat.
It's awesome. And one thing that's great, too, is that this is one of the first purchases like this Facebook's ever made. They may have made it initially for the World Cup. But now that they've started investing in it, I'm sure they're already seeing huge potential benefits to investing more. And as we know with technology, it increases exponentially. Technology is not something that, you know, in 2 years, it'll be a little bit better. In 6 months, the speech recognition technology will be 100 times better than it was 6 months ago or even today. And that means that pretty quickly, I think it's going to really develop into something you're talking about where it's utilized by a lot.
I think it breaks down barriers between different cultures, different groups of people. I think it, you know, all these wars that are going around the world, if we can actually talk to people, I think it can make such a huge difference in the development of wars. And I think that happened where Obama wanted to get into a war last year and people on both ends of the world did not want it, and he didn't. And of course, they figured out how to get into it anyways. But I think that, you know, as the people rise up together, the people will be able to communicate. It might not be the governments that, and their deals that they have going on, and the underlying business negotiations might not be working, but the people of both countries don't want to kill each other. You know, go talk it out, figure it out, but we don't want to die because you guys can't negotiate your stuff. And I think if people can talk to each other, they'll come to those conclusions. So I'm excited about that type of technology. And the more it can be implemented, not just in Facebook, but into all different kinds of social media type applications. So, okay, I kind of diverted a little bit.
No, it's always interesting to talk about, and that's one of the things I love about this work that I've been doing, is it's given me the opportunity to have such a different perspective, not just on the companies that I'm working with, but with the world that we're existing in, by looking at where this technology is going, where it's been, what the potential uses are, in conversations like this, where you tell someone, oh, they're investing in speech translation, and then hear someone talk about it in a way that I never even thought about it. It shows me that this data really does have such huge amounts of use, not just in the way I initially look at it.
Yeah, because and that's one thing I've learned, because I have a computer engineering and computer science degree, and I spent a lot of times early in my career doing a lot of software and systems development and stuff. And that's one thing I learned quickly is that once you get the data collected and once you have the basic tools, the imagination of the people is amazing, what they can do with it. And so if you can provide the tools and the means to do it, their imagination is, you know, has no bounds. It's really quite neat.
Exactly, exactly.
So, okay, so what other cool things do you know about?
This is the big one for me. This is one thing I've been excited to talk about, and it's actually Yahoo.
Well, what's going on with Yahoo? Because they've been kind of a dinosaur overall.
That's pretty much what I thought, too. When I was first doing my research, I kept seeing Yahoo pop up anytime I was looking for acquisition histories or just different stock prices or anything. Yahoo, Yahoo, Yahoo kept popping up. And I always laughed. I was like, yeah, okay, it's Yahoo. My grandmother loves their email. It wasn't really something I paid much mind to. But then I actually started researching it, and I realized Yahoo's been doing some incredibly interesting things over the past 3 to 5 years. And the first thing I want to start with is just their stock. Now, in 2008, everyone took a hit, obviously. And one thing to look at is not just when the hit happened, but how long since they've recovered. For the sake of looking at comparative prices, I'm comparing Yahoo and Microsoft. While both took a hit in 2008, Yahoo's actually doing comparatively better in terms of stock price than Microsoft is now.
Which is interesting, because Microsoft still has a pretty controlling percentage of business applications out there in the, you know, the large industries. So Yahoo must be doing something.
Yahoo is doing something, and it's something that I understand now why they've managed to stay under the radar, because it's not something that many people really think about. What they've done in the past 3 years is purchase companies that the only thing in which they have in common is that they have nothing in common. The three major focuses are buying Tumblr, a blogging website. They bought that for over $1 billion, buying a fantasy football website, and buying software for analyzing and logging stock data. Now, the stock software is the one I want to start with, because...
Well, they kind of have something in common in the sense that from a social media standpoint, people do a lot of blogging. Fantasy football is huge. And then what was the third one? Oh, the stock analysis. So those would be three big areas that people would use the internet for.
Mm-hmm. Those are three big areas that a lot of people would do research for.
But they're not really related, right?
Exactly. They're not really related. But along with that, there's no person really dominating any of those three markets. I mean, for fantasy football, yes, you have giants like ESPN, but they're not really designated focused on fantasy football. They've got other interests.
Well, fantasy football is huge.
Exactly. But looking at the stock software is a great place to start, because a lot of people don't even realize, if you go on your iPhone and pull the drop-down menu, they have stock data, and that data they get from Yahoo.
Well, Yahoo Finance is actually pretty well done.
Mm-hmm. It's incredibly well done. And the website that they use, the Tumblr website, although they don't do a lot in terms of running it, is also a pretty well-managed website in itself. And it has a very large base of people using it, just like fantasy football does.
Huh, interesting. And I have never used Tumblr. So is Tumblr something where a lot of bloggers are on it, or is it a tool for helping you do blogging?
Tumblr is something with a lot of bloggers on it. And what's really interesting are the two groups of people who primarily will use Tumblr. The groups of people you'll see most use Tumblr are those who are old enough that plenty of them still do use Yahoo as a search engine and as an email and everything else, or people young enough who, when Yahoo kind of hit that bubble and it burst, they don't remember it, or they weren't old enough to really have it impact their life in any major way. So you have two generations of people who only really know Yahoo as something in which they get to blog through, or if they need to check stocks or play fantasy football, they get to do that through this.
Okay, interesting. Well, maybe they can, with all the blogging and the stuff they figure out, they can be more of a, because I think they're trying to be more of an entertainment platform, it sounds like. And so they're trying to bring all these different pieces together, maybe.
I would say that's definitely one route that they might be considering. Another purchase that they've made, though, that really ties all this together in an interesting way is for a company called Visify. What Visify says, according to what you can find on it, is they were in charge of...
Ooh, sorry.
No problem.
Go ahead.
What they were in charge of was social media information transformation. So they have all of this incoming data from all of these different realms, and then they're able to translate it into something they can use, which would explain why a couple purchases later, they bought an advertising agency. They're taking all of this different data and finding a smart way to advertise to all of those people.
Can you hold 1 second? I'll edit this out. Hold on.
No problem.
Okay, Zach, do you want to start where you think you should start, and I will edit out and make sure it's not stupid.
No problem. So just seeing Yahoo really start to try and pull in such a wide range of data from such a wide range of people really shows that Yahoo's trying to branch out into advertising for a huge base of people, which means they're trying to pull in a large amount of revenue.
It sounds like they are still going after the traditional, they're going after this traditional entertainment platform, but buying a lot of different companies and trying to get really good at it.
I think that's a great way to look at it. What they're doing is they're going after these companies instead of necessarily doing what Apple or Microsoft or even Google does, where they buy it and then incorporate it into themselves. They buy a lot of these companies and simply let them function. If you were to look at Tumblr now versus before Yahoo bought it, there's no huge changes being made. They're simply looking at all of these successful companies and starting to incorporate them under their banner.
Well, they knew that they probably had a lot of cultural issues, and so why incorporate them into something into us when we were struggling? So that's probably an executive level decision. Let's keep them by themselves. They're doing better than we were. So, and you know, when you have culture issues in a company, you have to be careful. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying they have culture issues. I'm just saying they're, for a company that was struggling, that they're trying to turn around and become better, which it looks like they have, typically there's reasons internally that that's causing that. And so to keep them separate, that is telling me that. It's interesting. It's really, really interesting to see what they do and how it tells you how the executives are thinking and what markets they're going into, where they're spending their money. And also where the industries are going, at least where they're betting the industries are going.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really cool. So what are you going to do with all this? What does your company do?
What my company focuses on is by analyzing these businesses, trying to find patterns based off of what purchases will be made, where investments will be had, what products will be released, and based off of that, finding the companies that they need to buy from and working with those companies to develop good exit strategies, good goals for being sold or bought or even becoming incorporated into the bigger corporations. I'm focusing more at the lower level, newer companies as opposed to trying to sell this to a Microsoft or an Apple.
Well, basically, maybe they could sell their company to Google, or they could figure out, you're pretty much helping companies figure out what company might want to buy them.
Exactly. And then helping
that company. And where the market's going.
Absolutely. And based off of that information, it's also aimed at helping those companies decide if selling is the right move right now, or if it might be smarter for them to even become incorporated rather than simply be bought out and then retire. You have a lot of potential innovation that can get shut down by being offered enough money to retire, and then you never work another day in your life, even though you're the kind of person to come up with a product that
can
be bought.
People like that can't. Well, they can maybe, but most people like that can't. They could. It's probably a blessing in disguise for a lot of entrepreneurs because they get bought out and then woohoo, I go do something else. So
yeah, absolutely. And at the same time, it's cool to be able to give the opportunity to these new companies to, if they want to walk away, they're able to, and they're not stuck in a position where they financially can't because they weren't able to sell what they had for enough money, or if they don't want to walk away and there's someone who's, you know, still trying to get involved with these bigger companies, that they're able to have a lengthy career doing what they love.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, thank you so much, Zach, for joining us on the program. I really appreciate it. This has been really eye-opening. It's interesting to hear what they're doing, and the home automation really is going to be the next big thing. And robotics, you know, they've been talking about robotics for so long, and I know it's automating in industries, you know, like warehouses and things like that, but not like Jetson robotics. You know, you just aren't seeing that yet. And, you see some of that stuff in Japan and companies working on it, but we're just not seeing it yet. And the home automation, I've been hearing about that for 20 years, and we're starting to see it trickle in, but not like it could be. And so it's really fun to see these big companies making huge pushes in those arenas.
Yeah, it's really great because when you see these bigger companies start to invest in these budding industries, not only do they have much more capital than a lot of the other firms in these industries have, but along with that, they have access to technology from different firms that they work in that they can bring in to help develop the whole market. And that's so exciting and awesome.
Well,
so I'm really excited for
that. Well, I think with Microsoft having all those stores, if they're really going into home automation heavy, I think that's an entrance to this because people need to see it in action. So that'll be interesting as well. But I want to thank you so much for joining me on the show, and I will have your information. If you could provide that to me, I'll have your information on our radio page in case anybody wants to get hold of you or hear more, or if they want to use your services or whatever. But thank you so much because we've learned a lot today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Have a wonderful day.
Yeah, you too. You can tell Zach's a pretty smart guy. He gave us some pretty good information on what Google and Microsoft and Apple are up to. It's really interesting to see that Apple is investing so much money in China. What do you think they're going to do with their data that's over there? I think it's pretty scary, honestly, that once our data leaves this country, it's free reign. It's not illegal for anybody to do anything they want with our data. Or not just anybody, but for foreign countries to do what they want. It's not illegal for the NSA to get all the information they want off of data storage in China. So it's just something to think about. So I want to thank Zach for joining the show. And now I'm going to welcome the CEO of BizApps. Hi, Andrew. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Sarah. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Okay, we're going to dive right in. What can business apps do to help businesses be ready for 2015?
Well, what business apps does, very simply, is we make mobile app development extremely easy for small businesses. So if you're a small business and you're not currently...
Hold on a second. You make mobile application development easy for businesses?
Exactly. So okay. What we have is we have a website where any small business owner can sign up and easily begin creating a mobile app for the iPhone and the Android device. And also we provide a mobile website. And you can create these tools within minutes. Extremely easy to use. You can customize the mobile apps very easily. And basically what we've done is we've created a solution for business owners that don't have mobile marketing tools for the customers and would like to provide that, but aren't really sure how to build these tools or may think it's expensive or hard to do it. We're really about making it extremely easy and cost effective for small business owners.
Well, what's the difference between a mobile application and a mobile website?
That's a very good question, and one that I think a lot of small business owners get confused on. So a mobile app, in our view, is a great customer retention tool. It's a tool that is going to be used frequently by usually your best customers. And for a lot of small businesses, 80% of the revenue can come from 20% of their most loyal customers. So our mobile app product really helps increase customer loyalty. It helps increase additional purchases and rewards those customers for basically interacting and frequenting the business more often.
Well, how do you do that? I mean, like, what would be I'm sorry. You answer the question about what the difference is between a mobile app and a mobile website, and then I have some questions about what the heck you do with those things. Okay, keep going.
Keep coming. But I was just going to touch on the mobile website, which at BizDesk we view both to be equally important. We don't have a view that say you got to have a mobile app and not a mobile website, or you only need a mobile website, you don't need a mobile app. We have a view that both are important and both have different use cases. So I just explained the mobile app as a great customer retention tool for your best customers. You get them coming back in your business and really increasing that repeat customer. A mobile website is great for what we call customer discovery. So this would be a situation where maybe you don't frequent a business every week, or you're just looking for a place to eat in your local area, and when you do a Google search and you click on a business's webpage, in this day and age, it's absolutely crucial that that website is optimized for the mobile device, and we provide a solution for that too. So not only are we providing a way for small businesses to keep their best customers coming back, a mobile website is a great way for customers to discover their business, read their menu, find directions to their establishment, and then hopefully become a loyal customer after going through the business.
So give me some examples of what a mobile app would do so people can wrap their brain around, you know, why would we even give a crap, be honest? You know, there's so much out there and everybody's inundated. Why should I do another thing? So what does this do? Give me an example of how this could save them time. You know, a specific example. How can it save them time and increase their revenues?
Yeah, no, definitely. So at Business App, I think what really helps our business stand out from our competition is we really focus on what we call return on investment features. And these features would include features that either make a customer's lives easier, it makes it faster to utilize a service that a small business offers, or it rewards them for frequenting the business more often or making additional purchases. So we have features that range everything from a really powerful mobile food ordering system. If you're a restaurant, there's some really amazing stats about mobile food ordering.
So for example, let's say you're a company that caters a lot, brings in salespeople, or their salespeople caters a lot to their clients. You could and you like a particular restaurant, you could have a little app for that person that makes it easy for them to do the catering thing on a regular basis.
Yeah.
That's an example.
That's a perfect example. And, you know, with our product, you can create an app that would make it very easy to place the order. You can enter in your credit card information right inside the app. You never have to speak to a person. Just makes it very streamlined to order that. And then on top of that, the business could reward the customer for making a purchase of a certain size or maybe frequent orders. We have additional features. One of our most popular features is also similar to what you would see at a local coffee shop, like a loyalty punch card.
Yeah.
You can utilize that to encourage a customer to, say, come in and purchase more than once. You reward them for doing so, and say maybe when they get to the 10th purchase, you give them some sort of coupon, maybe a free lunch or whatever your business is planning to offer to your customers.
So there's incentive programs for all the people that go to the same coffee shop every Tuesday. There's an incentive per every Tuesday, Thursday or something. There's an incentive program they could sign up for that would make it easy for them to get incentives. So how about like a construction company that has, you know, a couple builders and they constantly are getting their supplies from them, and it could just be an easy way for them to get their supplies for that job. Things
so
like
features,
that.
So we have features that cater to really any sort of small business. So in that sort of use case, one feature that comes to mind that would be really helpful would probably be like a work order form. We have a feature where you can build out any sort of form that you can possibly imagine. You can make it look any way you want. You can add any sort of field. And for this example that you're bringing up, you can possibly build out a work order form that includes, you know, equipment or items that this customer is usually purchasing from this construction company. Or if they're just looking to get construction done on let's say maybe their backyard, they're looking to have it renovated. They could fill out a form that kind of describes their situation. And what that would do is it would give a really nice lead to a construction company. And then they could potentially use that to close additional business. So it can work to, you know, help bring more materials that they might purchase frequently, or just request them to come out and give them a quote on the job. And what's really powerful about that is if they can close, you know, just one new job from a mobile application, at our price point in which we offer a product, it would essentially pay for the mobile app for, you know, 2-3 years, given the size of the project.
Well, I could see it being a way, if you could make your customer's life easier, like if you're a supplier to hair salons, or if you're, I mean, so many different things you could do, you could really make your customer's life easier. They already buy, they're already 80% of your customer base, but if you could get it so that their life is so much easier buying from you, then you would lock in those customers. I mean, it's harder to leave a supplier that makes their life easier. You know, they're willing to stay with you. And same with like office supplies. And I mean, the things that you do on a regular basis and your best customers, you could really use these things. Not only would you save time, you would be saving time supplying your customers too.
And that's, definitely the power of our product. And just one other example that, that you kind of brought up too. We even have like a reservation system specifically for like hair salons and spas. If you're a customer and you're looking to save time, mobile apps are a great way to save time, book the services that you are looking to have, completed, whether it's a haircut or whether it's, getting your backyard remodeled. We have features that really cater to all those sorts of use cases. So, very diverse.
So it's basically
features and functionality.
It's basically business to business applications pushed down to the smaller level, so that individual entrepreneurs and smaller businesses can take advantage of what the larger businesses have been doing for a while.
Yeah, so that's another very interesting thing about mobile app development right now. So it can literally cost about $50,000 to develop an iPhone app and an Android app, and a back-end system that lets you check the analytics and how people are using the mobile application. And we provide all that at a fraction of the price. Our price point is $59 a month for the complete mobile app package that includes a dashboard for you to send out push notifications, which are small messages sent to all of your customers. Those are also great for, you know, pushing out promotions or just changes in your business. You can check analytics about your most popular features, how customers are really using your app. And if you were to build that from scratch, it would cost a lot of money. And before companies like ours, business app, it really made no sense for a small business owner to create a mobile app, because it's really all about return on investment.
Well, isn't this
if you're having to invest.
Go ahead, keep going. I was going to say, this could be a really good little solution kit for college students that want to start a new business, or entrepreneurs that don't have much money and they really want to get going. These could really be, it could be a really good toolkit for them.
Yeah. We've actually worked with my alma mater, which is CSU Chico State.
Yeah.
And they have an entrepreneurship program where they have a lot of students that come to the teachers and they have an app idea. They don't necessarily know how to build an application. And with our platform, we have so many versatile features where they can be used in so many different ways that we do have some students that will actually use our platform to build out like the first version of their mobile app. Sometimes it's like the last one that really comes to mind was like a fishing and hunting guide, just information about where the best fishing spots are, what the hunting laws are. Because to my knowledge, I knew very little about these laws. But if you fish the wrong fish or hunt the wrong animal, it can be very expensive and it's actually against the law. So having that information handy with you while you're out,
it's so hard to follow. I don't mean to cut you off, but it's so hard to follow laws. funny. Go
yeah,
ahead.
Yeah, I mean,
we you know what? We all break the law on a daily basis. Keep going.
Yeah. No, it's very true. But it was just one example of how a student had an idea for a mobile application. And he was able to utilize our platform and build it in, you know, an hour rather than a month of time, planning, tens of thousands of dollars.
Really gets them going. So it's easy to develop. So people can use it. It's easy to develop. I teach a class in the entrepreneurial school at the Carlson University of Minnesota. Carlson School. And so there's a lot of, it's so much fun working with college kids. I can't tell you how much fun it is, but there's so many bright kids that could take this on. And I'm thinking even some of the bright high school kids that would be interested in some of this stuff. But the bottom line is you're bringing business to business, commerce down to the average person and making it affordable and doable without spending a ton of money. I love that.
I think a lot of people are very interested in mobile apps and mobile websites and how do I connect with my customers where they are and that's on their mobile devices. And we've really, you know, set our goal to build a product that solves that issue and really answers that question. How do I connect with these customers? How do I build a mobile app? How do I basically reach customers on mobile devices without having to, you know, spend an arm and a leg. And that's pretty much what we're all about at Business App.
And you're growing pretty fast. You're on the Inc. 500 list, aren't you?
We were very humbled to receive the number 58 ranking on the Inc. 500 this year. So
good for you. That's hard to do because you have to do it for multiple years in a row, and you have to grow by thousands of percents, right? I mean, like, what was your growth rate?
Yeah, so since 2010, we've grown over 5,000%.
Wow, good for you.
That's when we started the company. Yeah, so it's been a fantastic ride, and we still have a lot of work to do and a lot of growth ahead of us.
Oh, building a business isn't any work.
It's
brutal.
At the same time.
Brutal.
Yeah, we've had our hard times and we've had our good times, but we're just, you know, very humbled to be where we're at, and it's just very exciting to be a part of an industry like the mobile industry. It's so fast paced and so much is changing that it's a really exciting time for us.
Well, good for you. Can I put your information on the radio page here so people can access it or figure out how to get hold of you?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Please do. We would be happy to any listeners or anyone who has questions about mobile, we'd be happy to start a conversation and hopefully help you reach your 2015 goals of hopefully finally going mobile.
Okay, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Okay, thanks, Andrew. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
As you can see, BizApps is an exciting idea. It's an exciting platform. I think bringing to entrepreneurs and small businesses the opportunity to create business-to-business and business-to-customer applications on their mobile devices is not a new concept, but it's new at an affordable price. And I think that's why they're growing by 4,000% a year, because people are realizing this is a good thing. And I would like to challenge the entrepreneurs out there to look at a service like this and see, can I do my concept with this? Can I build out my initial startup company with their platform? It'll cost a lot less money. You might be able to do it for, you know, less than $500, and you have this huge, not huge, but you have a platform there for your customers to use on mobile devices. And maybe you can develop a product that you can resell on a mobile device. I think that's a good idea too. So if you end up building a product on his platform and you end up reselling it, make sure you let me know. I want to hear what you're doing and how people are receiving it. In closing, I just want to let everybody know to have a wonderful day.